From the Land-Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 31st day of July, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible will join us to discuss the weather forecast right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. In fact, right there on that website, you can now listen to our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon. Our panelists for the day included Merrill Crowley, along with Joe Vaclavic, Chip Nellinger, and Michael Cordonnier. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture up on the website now, or stay with us for the full hour today on our home station for the complete program.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, I'm traveling again today, so no settlement prices, but at about 10 minutes to the hour, 1 o'clock, futures were like this for the day. Corn unchanged in the September at 315 and 3 quarters. December was down a half at 326 and a half. Soybeans were up 4 and 3 quarters in the lead August, 896 and a half. The trade there, November up 3 at 891 and a quarter. Bean oil, 76 cents higher. The bean meal down 70 cents. Wheat futures up around a penny to 2 for the day, and the live cattle futures on the day were around 77.5 cents. Feeders were up $1.80, and the lean hogs were anywhere between 25 cents and a dollar higher. We're joined by Mike Zuzlow at Global Analytics out of Atchison, Kansas. Thanks so much for being with us and talking to me early today. Mike, I appreciate that. It's been kind of a busy week. There were the big sales to China. The market didn't react. We have weather that's turned cooler going into the month of August. And there's just a whole lot to discuss. Why don't you give me your quick assessment?
Well, I'm glad we are going early, Todd, because 27 years ago, I made the best decision I've ever made. I married a girl named Rupel from Lawrenceville, Illinois. So a big shout out to the Rupels on both sides of the Wabash as we celebrate with our children tonight. I think the biggest deal that I see going on right now is the short-term mindset, this fund-led mindset, which has taken back control of the market since the June acreage report and pulled out all the premium in the corn market and continued to keep most of the premium in the soybean market. It is a same story, different day type element of trade. As you said, these big purchases by China, another big record purchase this week again, and the fact that their flooding is starting to garner more attention and their food crisis possibility is starting to be written about in magazines like Forbes this weekend, this past week. So I think that as we go into the weekend, go into this end of the month, and in many cases the end of a fiscal year for quite a few of the funds out there, it would be worth waiting on selling anything in terms of cash corn or new crop corn, in my opinion, because we've got the wheat underneath us. I think we have the demand low underneath us. I think the fact that Brazil was the number 3 wheat buyer on the export sales suggests that's a supportive feature and corroborates that opinion. And also these Chinese purchases, along with the fact that the Argentine ag attaché USDA cut the corn production from USDA's stated 50 million tons down to about 46.5 million tons. So I think things are moving in the right direction in the medium term. We're carving out a demand low, but the funds and the momentum and the sentiment, thanks to the crop conditions report, continue to hammer us, and we continue to be driven by the short-term news and short-term technicals.
So you think the demand will drive things in the month of August, particularly out of China, and what has to happen with those flooded areas? I mean, I know there's concern that the dams may not hold, and there's a whole lot of farmland. It's generally not corn. There are some soybean areas in there, but that would be to the northeast, the corn areas, that is. But still, taking farmland out means that there will be some demand someplace. So what are you watching for primarily?
Yeah, great question. I mean, as far as what I'm hearing from my sources in Asia and some of the news subscriptions that I am able to get, we're looking at about 5.5 million hectares, which would be about 11 million acres, maybe a little bit more. So I'll say between 10 and 20 million acres of, you're right, mainly rice and wheat production probably hit. We still don't know how much of the storage has been hit, though, in these areas as far as corn storage and bean storage. So I think that the 2021 demand from China will continue, especially if President Trump gets a second term. I think they'll feel like they need to continue to be on their best behavior with him. I think the other thing goes back to the actual supply side of the equation being back to the pre-June acreage report levels. That suggests to me the market's taken out all those lost acres that USDA threw at us at the end of June. And that would suggest to me then we are back above a 3.1, maybe even closer to a 3.3 billion bushel carryover in corn already being priced in with this 315 lead month futures price. So I think it is a demand-led market, and I think China will lead the demand. My South American colleague is also telling me that they're upwards of 2 years being sold out at this point. In other words, they're not only marketing 2021 in Brazil, but they're marketing 2022 corn and especially beans. So I think there's less competition there.
Wait, go back for me just a second. You think that the marketplace believes that all the corn acres that were not reported for the June 30 are now back in the market?
In terms of carryover, that's right. Because when we were originally at that 313 low in lead month futures before USDA shocked us with that big cut in acres, the trade was running a 3.5 to 4 billion bushel carryover in terms of their trade estimates. And so my price model and the fact that we're back to that price level would suggest we're probably back to a 3.2 billion bushel carryover. I'm not saying the acres themselves are going to be there. I'm saying
acres and yield of some sort, right?
I'm saying the ending stocks. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, ending stocks. Okay. Well, what do producers do? You said no cash sales at the moment. We have to think about old and new crop, and old crop's not got but a month left on it now.
Yeah, hedges for me are pretty simple math. I'm locking in corn all the way to December 1 at this point in terms of cash and futures for feeders. And I just started livestock hedging on Friday afternoon with the rally in feeder cattle, getting about 50% of my third and fourth quarter needs locked in because the profitability is there. But, you know, you just got through Iowa and you posted some really nice stuff on Twitter. I think everybody appreciated that. But when I look at the drought monitor, I've got 7 out of 8 major states out there, both sides of the Mississippi River, looking at a worse drought condition than they were last year at this time. 6 of those 8 states are at 50% or more. So I think that's still a developing story. So no hedges in corn, no hedges in wheat. Real eager to get back to that 925, 935 level in Nove beans and get some hedges on the books. Hopefully can do that before the August report.
Any reason to think the Chinese will actually enter the bean market? August would be the month they might really start to normally begin to buy from the United States.
That's exactly right. And I think that's where we're on track for. And I think this goes back to what does our crop look like? I think between the election and the politics and then just the net demand need by China, we almost are sure they've bought ahead some and hoarded some in anticipation of both our crop situation and also the presidential election. But if we would have any kind of issues, production issues with the soybean crop as we enter this first 10 days of August, I think they would come back in. And I think it especially alleviate my fears that they would make any cancellations anytime soon.
Anything else before I let you go for the afternoon?
Well, the record high in gold is the only thing I would touch on, Todd. A lot of people have asked me, why is that happening right now with a 33% negative GDP? And I think it's pretty simple in terms of my mindset. You're buying gold right now because you're nervous that COVID is going to get worse, and you're nervous that the upcoming vaccination coming this fall or early winter gets pushed out. So I think it's the last man standing as far as safe haven, given the tough situation the U.S. economy is in and given the fact we can't get that next fiscal stimulus bill done, although that looks like it may be back on track.
Hey, thanks so much. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you. You bet. Have a great weekend, Todd.
You too. That is Mike Zuzulo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. On this Friday, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. I think we have a whole bunch to talk about. Eric, let's get right into it. First, this last rainfall that we've got, I think, and I haven't checked the rain gauge again, but I'm pretty sure I got around 2.7, maybe 2.9 in my gauge out of that. But I suspect some people didn't get very much at all.
Yeah, it was an interesting setup that came out of the Central Plains. We actually had two shortwaves in the upper levels of the atmosphere that dug in from parts of Nebraska and Kansas. And I'll tell you, parts of Nebraska and Kansas got a lot of rain. As that then went through Missouri and the southern half of Illinois, there was quite a bit of rainfall in some locations yesterday. Nice steady rainfall, heavy at times. But yeah, like you said, we had some locations in Illinois here that did pick up almost 3 inches. In other places, you know, still getting at least 3/4 of an inch. And that's that rainfall that honestly will kind of cap off a lot of the crop here at the end of the month of July. Now, what we have in the near term, though, is that same system is going to try to pull through the eastern corn belt. And that's a place that we've got some pockets of dryness, especially in parts of northern Indiana, southern Michigan, and a lot of Ohio that are kind of desperate for getting some of this rainfall. So this system, this slow mover that came through was really quite important, I think, to a lot of the corn crop and soybean crop across the primary corn and soybean belt.
Speaking of the eastern corn belt, I want to go all the way to the east coast and maybe the two work together. We've got a hurricane that we're tracking. I don't know whether that'll stall out that slow mover going to the east or not, but I bet you have some ideas.
Yeah. You know, it's been an interesting one to watch and an even more interesting one to pronounce. The correct pronunciation of this hurricane is Isaias. And if you were to look at it, you might think it's Isaias, but it's pronounced Isaias. And it's overnight last night did something that a lot of hurricanes don't do. And that was go over the top of the island of Hispaniola, which is where Dominican Republic and Haiti are, which has got a big mountain chain in it. This hurricane strengthened during that time period. And normally it's disrupted by that mountain. So as it gets over the warm waters of the Bahamas and then into the warm waters tucked there into parts of like just off the coast of Georgia, North and South Carolina, the potential of this hanging on to hurricane strength is quite high. But you're right, it's that slow moving system that went through us that's going to be a part of the reason why it's got a better chance, I think, at hitting the East Coast, because should that system gone through us faster, it would have pushed Isaias away. So here's what I'm thinking about. When we look over, like for example, in North Carolina, where this could make an impact, we've got some corn and soybean fields in North Carolina that are super high input in high-yielding fields that have had a rough go of it, and this rain is going to be needed. But the stand quality, I was just talking to someone this morning, and the cornfields in North Carolina is pretty poor. So if the winds come in, they could have some major trouble there. But they want the rainfall, but don't want the wind. And it looks as though Isaias is going to be bringing both to North Carolina. So by the way, there are two other systems in the tropics we're watching. And as I look out over the next month, I don't see a lot shutting the main development region in the Atlantic down. And by the way, 2020 is the fastest we've ever made it to the letter I in the alphabet here for hurricane names or tropical storm names. So this season's cranking right now.
Coming back to the Corn Belt, looks like the short-term pattern is going to be cooler weather in the Midwest. What's after that? And maybe you can tell me a little bit about the cooler weather, too.
Yeah. So, you know, 2 weeks ago when we last talked, I was saying, hey, it looks like August is going to continue this July pattern, which meant at times we brought in some hot conditions and quite a bit of storms. You know, 2 weeks ago, that was the evidence I had. And then last week, I saw things really shifting now. And we are looking at a forecast right here in central Illinois over the next couple of weeks that at least through the next 7 days, we may only have one day that really cracks into the low 80s. We're going to see a lot of upper 70s and really decent weather. Now, thinking about that, that's going to be a breakaway from July, because July finished with an average temperature departure of about 3 to 4 degrees around central Illinois. But we were wet, too. It currently, in the 128-year record, stands in central Illinois as a top 30 in terms of wettest years. Southern Illinois, top 10. So very wet conditions there. So yeah, we're sliding into a cooler pattern. There's going to be a lot of morning dew out of this, and it's going to be one that I think the crops are going to take in pretty favorably.
Things changing in the Pacific at all?
Well, we keep seeing these kind of head fakes, these surges of La Nina-like behavior. The water temperatures will cool temporarily, the trade winds will crank up, and then it just doesn't last more than a couple of weeks. And so I think that's really what's driving the the mid-level winds over the the North Pacific, keeping all of it unblocked. So while we say, hey, we got some cooler weather coming in for maybe the next 10 days here, at least in central Illinois, with nothing shutting down the North Pacific jet stream, I think we're going to probably have periods of much above average temperatures at some point at the end of July too, the end of August as well. So, and by the way, historically, looking over the last 70 years, September's got a nice upward trend in terms of temperatures. So we should be looking out for that as well. But at this point, I don't see much shutting down our stormier pattern, although it's just going to be cool for the next 10 days.
What are you watching on the global front?
Yeah, let's go all the way over to China first. I am still seeing the models picking up on a very wet bias over the next 15 days in the regions that have been flooded. And my concerns are really starting to elevate that I don't know what could happen to the Three Gorges Dam and the half a billion people that live downstream of it. And I'm sure you've heard a little bit about it in the news, but it's just one of those things that should that go, or should there be major flooding problems, we're talking about a lot of farm ground that's going to be put underwater. At this stage, I don't know. The news stories are kind of hard to follow out of China. In Europe, especially over toward Black Sea area, the Russian wheat belt's forecast to get quite a bit of rain over the next 15 days, but parts of Western Ukraine are dry, and the dry places in parts of France, Germany, and the Iberian Peninsula, so Spain, are not forecast to get a lot of precipitation either. And I think the last thing I want to tell you is the cooler water that is right along the west coast of South America. We need to talk about that frequently over the next few months, because that is pretty well correlated with drier conditions, that and a few other things though, with drier conditions to start the planting season for first crop soybeans in like Mato Grosso. And you know what happens if they can't get that in fast, then we start to worry about how quickly they get in the Safrina crop, which is mostly corn and cotton. So we have something to watch in South America and maybe some positive news for North American markets should that materialize later on this summer.
Hey, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Yesterday afternoon, we recorded our Commodity Week program. The whole of that program is up online for you to listen to right now at willag.org, or anytime that you would like to, on demand. Again, willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast applications. Our panelists for the week included Michael Cordonier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois, Merrill Crowley from First Choice Commodities in Watseka, Illinois, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois, and Joe Vaklevic at Standard Grain in Gallatin, Tennessee. I started, as usual, by getting a list of items we should discuss for the day. Here's Merrill Crowley's list.
Corn loads, have they already occurred, or are they still to come? Then the insurance average versus that fall low, and how that works and what you might think about doing for marketing, U.S.-China relations, and the U.S. dollar.
Chip Nellinger, he brought us through a bunch of stuff. Anything else you want to take up?
Wow, that was an extensive list. I'd say the weather in August, the fund links in beans, and I think probably that could be an all-inclusive list that Merrill just gave us right there.
You betcha. Anything else, Joe Vaklevic or Michael Cordonier?
Yeah, we are in the process of pricing in a record corn crop. I guess my question, and this would actually be a question for everybody, how soon do we price in this record corn crop? Because it seems like it's awfully early, and it seems like we've got a pretty good indication that this thing's going to be a monster. This seems like a year to me that you may price this thing in and discount it very, very quickly or very early, maybe more so than in a typical year. And I'd be interested in hearing what everybody has to think about that.
Michael, do you have anything to add to the list of items we should take up?
That was a pretty good list, I think. So I'll start off with the condition of the crop and my yield estimates and that sort of thing.
Well, let's do that then. Why don't you go ahead and take that up, because I know you released that recently.
Yes. Well, the big news this week, of course, was the big increase in the good to excellent condition ratings. 3% increase for both. Put both corn and soybeans at 72% good to excellent. They're better than average, of course. And to show you how big of an increase that was, if you go back about 25 years, for the corn to go up, it only went up one time, 5%, good to excellent. That was back in 2021 when you compare this week in July. It went up one time, 2%. That was 1998. So it almost always goes up 1%. And then for soybeans, if you go way back, it went up 5% this week in 2001, and then twice it did 3% increase, 1998 and 1995. So a 3% increase is a big, big increase. Now, I did increase my corn yield 1.5 bushels. I'm 178.5 with a higher bias. I increased my soybeans 1 bushel to 51, also with a higher bias. You know, I think the trend this summer has been the actual weather has not been nearly as threatening as the forecast. You know, we had a couple threats of these big domes coming in. They never lasted very long. The temperatures broke, rain came through. And right now, I would say maybe a week ago, I thought 85% of the crops are doing good, 15% need a rain. Now I would say maybe 90% doing good and 10% needing rain. And the two areas that still need moisture, west central Iowa, sort of straight west of Des Moines, and then most of Ohio, eastern Indiana, and a little bit of Michigan. But those eastern areas might get rain anytime soon. So the crops are on an increase. We still got August to go, so we're not home yet, but they're going into August in good condition. I think the weather is very benign. It's getting cooler, so daytime highs, not nearly as high as before. Here in Chicago, we've had 21 days, 90 degrees. But you go up for the next 2 weeks, there's no 90 degrees for the next 2 weeks. So temperatures are going to cool off. You can live with lesser amount of rain if the timing is right and the temperatures are cooler. So I think we're on an upward swing here for both crops. And what's the limit? I don't know. But we could easily go above 180 for corn. I'm not there yet, but give me another week or two with slow filling of the grain and no extreme heat or extreme dryness, and we're going to do pretty darn good, I think, before it's all said and done.
Merrill Crowley, you have a question for Michael Cordonnier?
Kind of a two-parter, and I'm going to ask it in two separate parts, if you don't mind. So you're saying 178.5 and you're higher biased. What are you thinking about the 182s? And I think we even had a 188 guess out there today.
Wow, 188? Wow, I don't know about that. I would give a 182 or 183, I'd give that maybe a 15-20% probability right now. I'd have to see some rain in August, of course, so you can't quite be confident about that yet. But it wouldn't take much rain to get us there. And like I said, you know, if you had 3/4 of an inch timed out a couple times during August, that would get you there. Or if you have one good rain over the next week or so, that would probably get you there. So we're getting pretty close to being done.
That's Michael Cordonnier of Soybean and Corn Advisor out of Hinsdale, Illinois. He, along with Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Joe Vaclavic, joined us on our Commodity Week program, recorded yesterday afternoon. You can hear the whole of that program online right now, if you'd like, at willag.org, willag.org. Otherwise, stay with us here on our home station. More of Commodity Week in just a moment.